my dear. Saturday night, kids. Time for another monster chiller horror theater. Oh! Ah, I bet you're good and scared, huh?
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Pod Stallions, the number one podcast for your scrapbooking needs. I am Brian, and with me, as always, to my left is Jason. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, sir. How are you? Good to hear
Good.
Your voice.
Good. Now that I've had a trip to Michael's to buy more googly eyes.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Didn't know you were running out.
Well, you know, the greatest thing today was Michael's actually put self-checkout.
Wow.
Wow. So I didn't have to wait for an octogenarian cashier.
It's a big day over
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So we are discussing the passing of an icon in comedy, especially if you're Canadian, and that is the late Joseph O'Flaherty, who passed April 1st. How fitting on April Fool's Day.
How fitting, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a Behest of Me episode, because I was a huge fan of Flaherty, and one of the greatest... you know, stings I had recently was I went to his town of Pittsburgh to meet him at Monster Bash.
Right.
And he unfortunately had to cancel, which was due to the ill health that obviously ended his life. And that's a real downer.
Yeah.
You know, I adored this man. Always felt like he didn't get the credit he deserved for his comedy. He's quite a devious talent in the fact that he's such a glue, you take him for granted a little bit.
You do, and I was gonna say, he, you know, every, you know, we always talk about you know, how much we both love SCTV. I think
oh yeah,
you know, I think Monty Python means more to me probably than it does to you, and to me they're the Beatles, because they were the, you know, the first troupe that, of course, after, like, you know, when Beyond the Fringe hit Broadway, but that was a very different thing. They were the first kind of troupe that took television sketches and then put them on stage and did like little tours and were kind of treated like rock stars. And SCTV to me is about the closest anything ever got to that.
Yeah. You know?
And,
yeah.
And in each of them, there are, like, you know, in groups like that, and of course SCTV, the talent changed a lot. You know, they rotated, you know, in and out sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
But Flaherty always seemed like the guy that, he was so good at what he did, but he never broke the way Moranis did, or Candy, or even Eugene Levy. The amount of work that he eventually, you know, God,
yeah,
for some reason,
it's stunning.
Just, yeah, like he was reliable, and people, you know, put him in loads of things, but he never got that thing that sort of, you know, catapulted, put him into the next.
Yeah,
the next
and
level.
You think about the people he rubbed elbows with as peers.
Yeah,
it's mind blowing, and one of the things I think about a lot is he was, of course, involved with the Second City before he,
yep,
you know, broke out. And he, there's not a lot of anecdotes I remember, but I had this book in college, and there's a thing in improv, I guess, where like one person narrates and the other person has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was basically mention that nobody wanted it when Joe was the narrator, because he was kind of devious.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he had kind of an edge to him, which was what made him funny, you know, a little bit of anger to him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, like, apparently he made Gilda Radner, like, spin and spin and spin around. Like, he just kept making her dance. And it just made me laugh, because I realized, like, you know, there isn't much on film that, you know, I think Radner and Flaherty were ever together for very much. But here they are, you know, here's this anecdote about them, you know, in the early days.
Yeah.
And he realized this guy, that the superstars this guy must have seen.
Yeah.
You know, had been like, you know, people looked up to him, and I can't understand it.
There's just something that I don't know what it was. And I don't think it was like, you know, he self-sabotaged, could have had thing. Or no. I just, there's something there that, I mean, even Ramis, who, you know, what wasn't on, you know, the show, and he did, you know, stuff on stage, but then on the original show was only like a season or whatever it was.
Ramis already had like writing gigs.
Yeah, like, but he became massive, though. Became massive. Like, once those movies started to click and directing and everything, and it was like, and Flaherty kept popping into things, but he just never, I mean, I remember when Freaks and Geeks hit, and it was, I don't know if I'd read about it in like Entertainment Weekly or something, or how I knew, I don't know if I saw a commercial or whatever it was, but like from the first time you saw it, if you like that show, you knew that this show, you know, you just knew. I knew after two episodes, like, this show is not going to last. There's no way. It's too good.
Perfectly honest with you, I never caught it when it was on the air because I was like, yeah, no, this is doomed.
I watched like, every episode. And part of the joy was Joe Flaherty as
the dad. Like, I heard that so much.
Yeah. Probably the best thing. Meaning not I'm not saying the funniest thing here, but I'm saying that the thing that became the thing that people remember him most for, if you took a poll, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, not just the people that knew SCTV, but because Freaks and Geeks has sort of, you know, grown in the love for it's grown over the years, and of course everybody in it, you know, went on to, you know, bigger things, but it became this thing that he became like a certain pocket of the population or a certain type of generation's dad, like, kind of like, oh man, he, what a great dad he was in the show. And that's kind of what he get remember for. So to see him in that, I just went, oh my god, this is, you know, why did this take so long? Like, here he is, you know. And that ends up being the thing. Like, he never, I don't know what it was, I don't know why he, and maybe it was just because he, you know, I think it was one of the problems, you know, Dan Aykroyd always had too, was that Aykroyd was always, you know, Dave Thomas even, you know, in a way, it's like they're always doing characters. So, you know, nobody knows quite what to do with them. Maybe it was something like that, or the,
you know, what you may have a point there. I never thought of it that way. But it's just, I just can't believe the amount of characters he pulled off on SCTV. You know, everybody did an enviable amount.
Yeah.
But his seemed to be, like, under the spotlight more than a lot of them. You know, you have Guy Caballero, that's the head of the network. And then Sammy Maudlin, the host of the hit talk show.
Yep.
And, you know, and then as the show progressed, and we were just talking about this before we hit record, they start to get, like, I'm thinking of like the 80s when they're on Showtime. Were they on Showtime or
I think it was either Showtime or Cinemax or something.
Cinemax, yeah, it was like one of those things where it was like a pay channel show at that point.
Yeah. And
everything had kind of changed.
Yeah.
And they kind of went like, instead of, they actually kind of went, got smaller. And it kind of worked, like, where all of a sudden SCTV felt more like a local UHF channel,
yeah,
in some ways. And I always,
well,
really,
they started
liked
doing
that.
More, they started doing more sort of long form narratives,
right? Yeah, yeah, like the Six Gun Justice and things,
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
or like the there's one where they're like, I think Caballero's like keeping them all hostage, holding them hostage.
Oh, yeah, because they're stealing ideas, yeah. And you know what?
Yeah,
I will, I'm gonna go out and say this, I don't think there's any bad SCTV.
No.
I watch it consistently. I absolutely love it. And I love those end run episodes, even though you kind of like, you know, when they start doing like the days of the week, there's, you know, John Candy starts to get, you know, but then you've got, this is the actress I was wanting to talk about. They added like Mary Charlotte Wilco, for a few episodes, and she brings a whole bunch of weird characters. But during that time, Flaherty gets a lot more screen time, and he gets to go kind of crazy with his characters.
Yeah.
And I love, he creates a couple characters in that season of SCTV where, like, he creates this character named Duard Weiss, and, like, there's nothing... It's really kind of a subtle character. Like, he's just a guy wearing a leather jacket, but that leather jacket is zipped up all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a real, like, hello, I am Duard Weiss. If you're a drunk, I will drive you home for $20, you know? And but they use him a lot, and it's just, there's something really funny about the character, even though you're really not sure what you're laughing at. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, just, well, that's... Like,
this guy's an oddball.
Some of the later stuff is kind of like, you know, when I look at it now, I kind of go, how many people were getting these jokes? Like, who, some of it's so, of course, there's a lot that's inside baseball, you know, for Canada, you know, like the guy who's the guy that does all the celebrity interviews that Martin Short did.
Brian Lanahan and
stuff like that.
Phil's Nails was Gibner Carpet, and, Crazy Highs was Crazy Joe's. I swear to God.
Like that.
I swear to God, there's nothing different about a Crazy Joe's commercial than a Crazy Highs commercial.
You know, that I wouldn't necessarily have gotten the reference, but it didn't really matter.
It didn't matter.
Some of it now, I just go, they really, and I've heard them talk about it too, where they kind of hit a, you know, certain wall where they kind of went, we didn't know if anybody was watching. And so we just didn't give a shit. Like, we were just doing stuff to make us, you know, what we thought was funny. And it wasn't about trying to, you know, they just never knew kind of who was tuning in. Of course, you know, Bob and Doug got huge. And then, of course, you know, when I started to see those faces pop up into other movies, you know, when I'd see, you know, Candy in Splash or you know, Flaherty in Stripes, even though he's, you know, he's not even in it much, you kind of go, oh, these guys all kind of know each other. Like, they must all know each other. Or, like, you know, the SNL guy. See, I wouldn't have known the connection between SNL and The Lampoon and, Second City and all that.
And
you'd watch something like Stripes and kind of go, oh, so I guess the SNL people must know all the SCTV guys. They must all be buddies or something. You know, I just thought it was there was like a mutual admiration society. I didn't know that there was that history there, which makes it that much more interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the things that blew my mind when I was like 12 or 13 listening to National Lampoon records, which
probably
shouldn't have been. But and I got to tell you, I found Flaherty really funny on because he gets to play broad characters on it. I just remember there was this one, I think it's about like hillbillies immigrating to America. Like, as if they just come from another country. And I can't do it justice. It's been a long time, but I just remember Flaherty and Ramis are really funny in this. Like, Ramis is like, you can drop me off here. I want to stand in front of the bus station and pick my nose. You know?
Well, I heard the first time I heard some of that stuff, I think, was Dr. Demento. That he would.
I think that may be where I got it. And I think I went down to the library and.
Yeah. I used to get some stuff from like record conventions that I would go to try to find, you know, certain vinyl things. But, you know, it was like as a kid and, you know, being probably an odd kid, when I think about some of the references I got within the show, you know, like I knew enough about Chinatown to kind of know Polynesia. And what was it? Polynesian Town or something?
Polynesian Town. Yeah. You know,
I hadn't seen Chinatown at that point, but I knew. There was some kind of, like, I knew the Godfather connections. I'd seen that at that point. But there's the first time he does Kirk Douglas, when Flaherty is Kirk. As a kid, like, fell off the couch. Like, it's like some game show. And he's just doing the most basic, angry Kirk
Douglas. Yeah, when he's never moving his mouth. Yeah. You know what? That's exactly my first memory of Joe Flaherty that I can truly remember is a very early, like, global TV, SCTV, where he's playing Jack Klugman. And it's Quincy Cartoon Coroner or something like that.
Okay.
And I honestly remember going, like, laughing at that. He's just because his Jack Klugman and his Kirk Douglas, they're neighbors in his.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
the choices that they would make on the show, the choices of impressions and characters were just so we've said this a million times when we talk about SCTV, like some of it was so good it made you, like the Sammy Maudlin show was so good it made you uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It you know that they so nailed what we now constantly refer to as cringe, as yeah. these you know a new docuseries about somebody's you know light, well, you know the cameras are everywhere, you know there's there's a camera in front of you and so you can't not be performing, and you just go, oh god, I can't watch this. They were doing it on SCTV with that show in a way that I mean, don't you think that was so far ahead of the
well, I always want to cite
the game of like, you know, making fun of that sort of thing, that sort of cheesy
That's what I mean. Like they were Adult Swim before Adult Swim. And, you know, case in point, the Days of the Week is not that funny.
No.
But it is eerily an amazing parody. It's such a good parody.
Yes.
Of a soap opera. It feels real.
Yes, it's the length of time that it takes. Like they really take their time. With even the music,
but all the jokes aren't telegraphed either. Like you don't understand how like stupid Rocco is unless you're listening and paying attention. If you're
Rocco and you know, Candy,
Rocco that with double. His giant sideburns. Like I think I did actually put on Days of the Week, like SCTV once, and my grandma came in and started watching it, and she kind of asked me what I was watching. Are you watching? Is this a story? You know, I seem to remember that.
That's and funny.
Because it was, you know, it was also like usually the Days of the Week were like half an hour sketch.
Yeah.
So yeah. I seem to recall that actually happened. But yeah, it's a spot on parody of a soap opera to a painstaking point of irony, but then like, yeah, you could see why the general audience went, I don't get this. And it's it isn't a big ha-ha, but it is really funny when you think about it.
And Flaherty had this thing that you mostly saw with Count Floyd, where it seemed like he was kind of making it up as he went. So when in some of his characters, the delivery would be like, well, yeah, well, because we're going to. Yeah. So do the thing that we're going to, you know, and he's kind of finding the words like he did with Count Floyd so much. It's going to be, oh, it's let me tell you, fool, you don't want to you know, he was so good at it that you just like, I don't know if all these pauses are there, if this is scripted, if he's just like, this is the section of the script where it's like Joe is going to come up with some weird shit he's going to say as Count Floyd or whatever. But he had that with some of those characters that just, even Caballero, the way he just sort of, you know, it seemed like it was
conflict though. It's all based on conflict. Like Count Floyd is a guy that's trying so hard to be spooky.
Yeah.
Well, nothing is going his way.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Like he doesn't have a budget. They never give him a scary movie.
And then once the clip is shown, still trying to convince you.
Yeah.
After he's seen a horrible clip, going, "Oh, did you see that bit with the thing and the dog and it? Oh, you know, he on his face, he knows like, oh, this is the worst."
He's a company
thing.
Man.
Yeah, but he's still. Oh, did you see the part about? Oh, I didn't know where to look.
Well, he's also the anchor. Like Count Floyd is definitely Floyd Robertson, the news anchor with Earl Camembert.
You think it's the same character then?
The same character because it's 100% because when Floyd Robertson has his problems with alcohol, he hosts the news dressed as Count Floyd.
And that's I don't remember this at all.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember this at all because that was a runner. That was an early runner. The Floyd and Camembert that was earlier, right? Because it was on like every episode there was, and you know you knew the gist. It was almost like the SNL thing where Emily Lachella gets it wrong or something.
From the improv, it was called Big News, Little News.
Yeah, yeah. And
but
so
that
you
was
just,
an actual like touring sketch.
And you knew where it was going. Like you'd know that Camembert was going to say or do something stupid, and then Floyd was going to be like, "Where did you get that? Was that's a terrible story? Where did that come from? Like, why didn't you? How did you not know that that was?" And it didn't matter because of the rhythm of the two of them. I mean, I think about these people on SCTV, that cast. And I know there's lots that sort of jump in, but I mean, I think when I say the cast of SCTV, I think of, you know, Flaherty, Candy, Levy, O'Hara, I guess Moranis and Short and Martin.
Thomas.
And Thomas, like those, was that six or seven? That just, you go, my God, like it's just one of those moments of getting all that talent in one room.
Oh,
because
sure,
every
yeah.
one of them was, even who's the, not Emily Littell, who's the cleaning woman? That's always getting.
Oh, Perini Scleroso. Yeah, that's a really
it's
great bit.
Such a basic gag. But the just, you're going to take care of it. Oh, go to take care of it. You know, just the repeating of whatever is being said to her.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely hysterical. And it's just one of those moments where you get that kind of, it's just this, you know, these laser beam focused people that were so good at what they did. And Flaherty was just like, he was old reliable. Like he had loads of characters, but I don't know why he never sort of exploded. And maybe it's just because he was more low key than some of the other, just that maybe he just looked more like the everyman kind of, you know,
yeah,
Moranis kind of looked more nerdy and Dave Thomas never, you know, I mean, besides the, you know, Strange Brew, like he never, you know, exploded, I guess the way, you know, Moranis did.
Well, he had some really strange pilots.
Yes.
I've always likened Dave Thomas to being very much like Dan Aykroyd. In the fact that they have great ideas that they often can't hone down,
yeah.
You know, like they have all these crazy ideas and like, I think, was it Dave Thomas did like that Rocket Boy show? Did you ever see that?
Oh yeah. That's ringing a bell. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like James Hong in it. It was filmed in like Toronto, but and I think he was in another, Joe Flaherty was actually in one of Dave Thomas's pilots, I can't remember. And, you know, post SCTV, there really is an interesting up and down with Flaherty and a lot of the SCTV cast, actually.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I remember Catherine O'Hara being in Heartburn. I think it was written by Nora Ephron, directed by Mike Nicholson.
It was Nicholson and Streep, right?
Nicholson and Streep, yeah. And she, yeah. I think it was one of the first, like, you know, non kind of wacky things that she had. You know, she was, you know, it was like a straight role kind of. And kind of going, oh, wow, that's, you know, it's Catherine. And then, of course, you know, she's done, loads of, you know, comedic roles, too. And Andrea Martin, and I think Andrea Martin was a little slower to kind of get that, too. But then I think she did a lot of stage work. And then how many of those big, fat Greek brunch movies have they made? Like 17 of those things. So everybody's done well, you know. And she was on, she was on Only Murders in the Building, the past season, and you know, everybody still kind of knows you there and stuff. But Flaherty would just kind of pop into things, like he'd sort of be, you know, what is it, Back to the Future 2 that he's in, that he shows up.
Oh yeah, the best
like
part
at the end or
that
something.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah, which is like I didn't even remember until I saw somebody posted on Twitter, because I don't know those other two movies as well, but you know, he was in Used Cars too.
You know, I was just about to bring that up. I didn't realize he was in Used Cars.
He was in Used Cars. Yes. He was like,
He's also in Tunnel Vision, which we didn't discuss. That's like a pre SCTV thing. You ever heard? Yeah. It's a indie film. It's a comedy. Listen to this cast though. Roger Bowen, Chevy Chase, John Candy, Joe Flaherty, Howard Hessman, Lorraine Newman, Betty Thomas, Phil Proctor, Al Franken, Tom Davis, Ron Silver, and even Ernie Anderson and Danny Dark.
Whoa. What year was this?
76. And I've seen this, and I honestly can't remember much about Tunnel Vision. But it is sort of like a, you know, one of those kind of like Kentucky Fried Movie type.
Right. There was a lot of those. Oh, you
blackout
know what?
Sketch movies. Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm getting this mixed up with, there was one that, what was the Fred Willard, like the blah,
roof
blah, trucking or, company kind of thing that he was part of. And they made one that was like, it was like Hollywood Boulevard or Coming Attractions or something like that. And it was, you know, a dozen sketches kind of in the thing that don't really
There's
work.
There's also right? Loose Shoes.
Loose
There's
Shoes.
There's a lot of these
one.
Kind of parodies.
Yeah.
You get kind of lost in those. But yeah. I have not seen Used Cars since high school. And
Used Cars is a gem of a movie. Like, it's a totally underrated comedy. Like, I'm almost positive it's rated R. And it was one of those, like, I had forgotten about for years until, you know, renting it, I don't know, 15 years ago or something, and went, oh my God, this is, you know, it's just one of those, you know, kind of wacky 80s comedies, but not like, you know, not like nothing but you know, poop and boob jokes and stuff. It wasn't like that, but
hey,
but it's a great
out,
idea. Mr. And you know who's in it? Who's Kurt Russell's right-hand man?
Garrett Graham.
The great Garrett Graham. And he's freaking hilarious in
Well, it's got David Lander and Michael McKean.
Yes, yes.
Lenny and Squiggy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I've never Wendy Jo Sperber, Betty Thomas, Dick Miller. Oh, I'm in.
Those all became like Zemeckis regulars. Like Sperber was in I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Flaherty might have been in that too. Maybe I'm wrong. But they somehow the connection with Zemeckis kind of kept going. So, you know, Flaherty's in Used Cars, and he's also in, he shows up in Back to the Future. And like, you know, these weird family trees that kind of start with all these people that know each other, you know, and you start to recognize.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I love that. I mean, like, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen a film by Ronald Howard. But he puts this odd actor by the name of Clint in all his films.
Oh, yes. I've seen – I'm more a fan of Clint Howard than Ron Howard, frankly.
I actually am, too. I was just being sarcastic. With
no,
this.
I know.
Some kind of acting troupe. He also put this man named Rance.
But, you know, it was – so I didn't see Used Cars when it came out. I would have seen TV, you know, edited on TV.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. The reason it turned me off is – do you remember, like, when they would – you'd watch an edited for television movie and the swearing was so bizarre?
Yeah.
That you're just like, I can't watch this.
Yeah. Yeah, just those bad sort of choices. But then I started – I noticed a thing – at some point, again, that weird brain that we had growing up, where I started to understand they shot two versions of a scene, let's say.
Yeah.
And I would go, wait a minute. And I think it was Love at First Bite. The television airing of Love at First Bite, there's a scene on the subway. He takes the subway. So after that first night of everything going wrong, you know, the coffin goes to the wrong place or whatever it is, and he ends up on the subway and some chick starts to come on to him or something. And I've only seen it when it aired on television, but I remember being as a kid, that wasn't in the movie.
Not in the movie.
So they would swap things out sometimes. And I started to notice that stuff as a kid with certain lines of dialogue and stuff.
Well, yeah. And I think even Superman, the movie was like, you know, they jammed everything they could into that.
Yes, there was there's a good like 5 minutes or so that were in the TV version, I think, that weren't in the film or something. And
yeah, like when he Luther has like the machine guns and the freeze ray.
The gauntlet thing. Yeah, that was
exciting. I was always why wasn't this in here?
But as a kid, there's no way to get
more
answers,
Lois,
you know?
Flying.
Yeah, you can't get answers as a kid. You're just like. This is and your brain starts to go, did I see that? Did they make a different movie? Like what, you know? But I would start to notice that swear words would get replaced. And and things like that.
Sometimes, but, like, ridiculously.
Yes.
My favorite was the jerk. You know, I think his dog's, what is his dog, a shithead or something like that?
Yes.
And they just put stupid. And, yeah. And yeah. You could, their mouths were still making the sound.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, and it usually was someone else.
Yeah, no, it wasn't doing even the, close. Yeah,
and it's not like, even close.
And you could just tell whoever was doing it didn't give a shit.
Right. Yeah. Right. They just thought no one's gonna care. No one's gonna notice. They're just gonna accept it. It is what it is. But Flaherty was just you know, he was like old reliable, and he, as the years went on, you know, you saw less of him. Like, I can't think of anything that I saw him in the last, I don't know.
Well, yeah, he would pop up, and that's what I wanted to kind of go through, some of the stuff he did post SCTV. We talked about, you know, Stripes. He voiced in heavy metal most of the cast of SCTV.
Oh yeah, heavy metal, and that was produced by Ramis, right? No, produced by
Reitman.
Yeah,
Reitman. Yeah. But Reitman was connected to, you know, Eugene Levy and Andrea Martin through like movies like Cannibal Girls, and it's all, you know. Yeah, he definitely was connected to all these folks.
Yeah.
And Going Berserk was like the first thing right out of the gate, and it was directed by David Steinberg, who had a TV show.
Yeah, I remember that on VHS, renting on VHS, I think.
Yeah, and the David Steinberg show, he had one in Canada. And for CTV, not SCTV, and Candy and Flaherty and Martin Short and Dave Thomas were on that, and awful. The Comedy Channel used to play it, but basically, like, the SCTV cast were in this David Steinberg show at the same time.
Okay,
but it just was.
And then Short,
you know what?
Short did was a brilliant. Didn't Short do a brilliant Steinberg? He would do in sketches.
Hmm.
Like, just wasn't it Short?
A booga booga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just had the voice. He really nailed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Steinberg directed this, and it is very SCTV like in a movie. It is not great. It's got Candy, Flaherty, and Eugene Levy. And the best part of it is there are a few, like, SCTV-style movie parodies in it.
Mm.
And different things that really do, like, oh, yeah, I wish this should have been the whole movie. Mm. But it's got, you know, it's weirdly enough, my mother gave me a copy of this on DVD. She's like, do you want this? I was like, yes, why do you have this?
Yeah.
But it was... They were at the grocery store, and John Candy, you know.
He'll like this.
Yeah. No, they bought it for themselves.
Oh, for themselves. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They also bought themselves Borat, and they did not enjoy that, let me tell you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a bit of a shock. Bit of a shock after a John Candy film.
A middling John Candy film and Borat, yeah.
But you know, I the other day, because we're prepping for this kind of, I watched a couple of things, and I think I might have even sent it to you. Maybe I sent it to I forget. But that one, I think one of the all-time funniest things they ever did on SCTV, and it's not even that long of a bit, is the Godfather takeoff and Floyd opening with Floyd the Barber.
Floyd the Barber.
My barber, and he sort of, you know, and he does the whole thing, and then Caballero, he's holding the cat. The cat's like trying to squirm out of his arms. It's, you know, he's like, hey, so listen. And then when he, you know, the punchline being, well, listen, that day may come, you know, one day, and that day may never come. I may call on you for a favor. You know, and then all of a sudden Floyd's like, well, maybe the pole wasn't broken.
Yeah.
You know, he backs up.
But it's just...
He wants him to kill these thugs, these other kids.
Yeah.
He wants them killed and then maybe just break Opie's legs or something, you know. And Eugene Levy is just like as funny as he's ever been.
Yeah,
He would do and Eugene Levy, I truly think, is, you know, when he's not, you know, there was that period where he sort of, you know, he just sort of did things and you kind of went, okay, it's Eugene Levy doing his thing. But on that show, he just, when he would get into a character like Bittman and Floyd the Barber, and you just, it's, you can't, yeah, I would put that in front of anyone and say, like, look, I don't know you, but I'm going to put something, put this on, and if you don't think this is funny, I don't know if we can be friends. Like, just watch this thing with Floyd and the Floyd the Barber and Caballero. But it's, yeah, it's almost like they're in a different, what I'm trying to say is like what Levy's doing is the impression that's kicked up to like 9. You know, he's doing Floyd, yeah, Floyd the Barber, and it's an insane notion.
Well, I think that actor had like declining health. And I think by like the end of the series, and this is kind of a little dark,
that could be, yes. But I mean, like, even on the show,
like, hello.
On his best day on the original show, he kind of, oh, hey, and you know,
as a kid, that one was really easy to get.
But then Flaherty is just doing something different. He's doing it a little more. He didn't make Caballero like when Caballero got started, it seemed to be more of a bigger character. And then it starts to just kind of be that Flaherty thing where he's just doing it so well, but he's not trying that hard. And I think that's one of the things where he didn't stand out in the way some of the others did because of those, you know, like the Kirk Douglas thing that he did. He didn't, you know, and really when he's doing the Bittman
Sammy Maudlin.
He's not the funniest character in the bunch. You know what I mean? Like he's brilliant, but he's not. It's Bittman and it's Lola Heatherton and Candy and all that. So maybe that's the thing that he just,
yeah,
he was that anchor. You know, like you said, like just the go-to guy, but he wasn't always the flashiest one. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that could be. I just, I guess I just kind of adored his characters. And this is one I wanted to bring up. Post-SCTV, Really Weird Tales. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I just recently rewatched this. And
I do.
This was a pilot for like a Tales, like a comedy Tales from the Crypt series, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very SCTV influenced, you know. There's the guy who plays Happy's in it, and John Candy's in it, and of course Flaherty is the, I think Catherine O'Hara's in it as well, and Flaherty is the, like, the Rod Serling of it, which is perfect.
Yes.
Because he's kind of doing that, I think he had a character on SCTV called Hugh Betcha, you know, Reverend Hugh Betcha, which, you know, was sort of a take on that Catholic priest thing. He played a lot of Catholic priests in his career. There was a Bing Crosby thing going on with him.
Oh yeah, Well, wait a minute. Was this a pilot or a series? This really weird.
This was a pilot, and then
I think I saw this. This rings a bell.
That was 80. That was 86. And then I remember taping this. Going back to busted TV pilots, this was a TV pilot he did with Kevin Meaney. In 88 called Limited Partners.
Oh, okay.
They were like two guys, you know, trying to get ahead in life. And I had a tape of this, but I can't find it anywhere. It must be on YouTube though.
Was he in the one that Candy and Levy did, Armed and Dangerous? Was he in that too?
You know, I don't think he was.
Okay.
Let me see. Let me see, because it's surprising he isn't. But I was just kind of, no, he's in Club Paradise,
which has Levy.
Yeah. And I remember as Levy and Andrea Martin and him, he's the pilot in that.
Yes.
And I didn't know this. He's in Sesame Street's Follow That Bird as Sid Sleaze.
Okay. That I knew from clips that I'd seen recently, but the one, the Club Paradise one, was that, okay, that was Robin Williams, and it was direct, was that directed by Ramis, or was it Reitman or somebody? Because it bombed. It totally bombed. But like,
yeah, it wasn't, it was the movie I was really looking forward to that summer.
Yeah, it was like Jimmy Cliff was in it, and Robin Williams, yeah. And Twiggy, I think, is the female lead in it too, maybe.
Yeah, Rick Moranis is in it, Brian Doyle Murray. Like it
and
has
the
a
guy, great... the guy who was on Newhart, that guy that I was talking about a couple episodes back, that was in the first season or two of Newhart, you know, the CBS, you know, the second Newhart.
Yeah.
He's one. He's like in the married couple. I think he's married to Andrea Martin or somebody in Club Paradise. And I always thought he was a Canadian guy. I don't know whatever happened.
Trying to
him.
Think of who that is.
Yeah.
Now I gotta go. You got me going through the menu here.
But that was 86. Club Paradise was 86.
Yeah, this guy's name is Stephen Campman, and he's American.
Okay. All right. That's the guy.
Yeah, he was Kirk. I don't, you know, it's been so long since I've
Kirk.
Seen
yes.
That show. I can't remember.
Yeah.
He's a writer, though, mainly.
Oh, okay.
He's a WKRP writer. He was an SCTV writer.
Oh.
All right. Look at us.
Okay. It's all coming together. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and he, no, that's acting in Club Paradise. I thought he wrote Club Paradise.
Yeah, but I think he's married. I think Andrea Martin is the wife. And so was Club Paradise directed by Reitman or Ramis or somebody? Who directed that?
Who directed that? Harold Ramis' wife was in that. Oh, okay.
David Lean?
Oh, it is a Harold Ramis film. I didn't realize.
It was Ramis. So that's the one that Ramis did after Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And I was all
for it, and it was kind of boring.
Yeah, and it just kind of – it's not terrible or anything, but it just kind of –
it doesn't have a point in some regard, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it really should have. And then I guess I don't remember this, but listen to this, like how his everything goes for him here. He's in One Crazy Summer, which is a Savage Steve film. Not my favorite Savage Steve Hollander film. It's one I can't even remember, to be honest with you. I prefer How I Got into College or
One Crazy Summer is the one where like Cusack is like a wannabe cartoonist or something.
I think so. I think it's the one that like Cusack like hates.
Okay.
Like I think he lost his marbles about it, and I don't think it's a bad film.
And it's also got Booger in it.
Yes. Yeah. You know, what's his name? Curtis.
It's got that one funny line where he's complaining about what a dead end town they're in, and the Booger character's like, I can't even get good drugs in this town. And he's holding a can of Ready Whip or something. That was the funniest.
Oh, no, I think that's actually Better Off Dead.
Is that Better Off? He's in Better Off Dead,
yeah.
too?
The yeah, Booger? He is in Better Off Dead. Yeah, I think he's in a lot of Savage Steve stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I don't remember his part in One Crazy Summer because I only watched that once. And then he has a bit part in Inner Space, which is a great film.
Joe Dante, Martin Short. Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, I do know this part. He goes right to Canada and stars in a film called Blue Monkey. And I think I have this on Blu-ray somewhere. And I have it on Blu-ray because it's another one of those things that's like mildly connected to SCTV in that it's him and Robin Duke playing a couple.
Okay.
And but it's also like it's a Steve Railsback movie. I like Steve Railsback, but he sure, like as the years go on.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Steve Railsback, the guy from The Stuntman and Life Force and that actor? Is that who you're
talking about? Yeah, he's in a Toronto, like,
And isn't he in Turkey Shoot, too? Isn't he in one of the...
He is in Turkey Shoot. Yeah, okay. I own a lot of... I have a... Whether or not I want to, I have a large Steve Railsback in my house.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, you got...
Like, it's not as big as the Vic Diaz section.
I love how you've got, like, a Steve Railsback shelf.
Oh, sure.
In your home.
Well, you got to prioritize, you know.
Yeah. I guarantee you're not the only human that has that.
I don't have a Steve Railsback section. I own a lot of Steve Railsback movies.
I once sat like two seats away from him at the Sunset 5 years ago when Chasing Amy came out. I went and saw it with a buddy of mine, and then this guy came in and sat like two seats down and to my right, and I turned to my friend. I'm like, holy shit, that's Steve Railsback. And of course, my friend was like, who the fuck is Steve Ellsback? You know. And then I kind of whispered, like, well, he was there's this movie called The Stuntman, and then he was also in Lifeline. Didn't matter. The guy didn't know who he was. But yeah. So I can say that I saw Chasing Amy with Steve Railsback years ago. Unintentionally saw it with him. But wow, you're a Steve Railsback.
Steve Railsback film collection. Yeah, I've got.
I love how you preface it. Like, it's a Steve Railsback vehicle. It's not one of his better ones. But
what I mean is that, like, I love Turkey Shoot. And
Turkey Shoot's great.
And there's something else. Yeah. I love Life Force.
Wait a minute. You love Life Force, or you dig it because it's so insane, or like, because it is. I mean, it is. I think it's gotten a bad it started to kind of, you know, the last like decade, people have said, actually, it's, you know, it's not that bad. It's, and then I rewatched it a few years ago. I'm like, no, this is really ambitious. It really is.
I think it's a neat concept that everybody couldn't see past the naked girl, which I get, but it was like, it's got some ideas in it. That's for sure. And I kind of like
the thing. That's the sad thing. You could not see past the naked woman because,
oh, no.
And anybody around should have said, look, let's, you know, we'll show it in the, she's in the cocoon thing. And then we got maybe one or two shots, but that's all we need. We don't need,
yeah.
Let's just imply it for the rest of the, and somebody went, no, let's just go all the, just the whole time. And, you know, like, is anyone going to pay attention to the rest of the story or the movie at all? But it's one of those insane, you know, I think it was.
I think you're right. I think I've come to appreciate it more. I like its score. I like its effects. Like, I'm starting to look at it more as, you know, not a teenage boy, but, you know, a man watching a movie and going, like, there's some neat ideas in this.
Yeah.
I love the cast.
It's almost kind of Hammer. It's got like a Hammer element to it too. Great.
Just want to let you know that we are like five doors down from Joe Flaherty now.
Yeah, I know. But you, once you say Steve Railsback, and I gotta go. Okay, we gotta dig into this.
I want to roam back because this is a part that's really interesting, and I didn't realize how much he tried to market Count Floyd after SCTV. And this is one of the great tragedies for me, was I wanted to talk to him about licensing Count Floyd before he passed away.
Oh, right.
You know, I just didn't know how to get a hold of him. He did a Kids Safe video. I believe he did a lot of commercials at one point. Like, all the SCTV cast.
You're saying tons. In like Canadian stuff?
In and out of character, yeah. okay. There's a wonderful Retro Ontario on YouTube. It was a wonderful montage of all the SCTV actors in commercials.
Oh, fun.
It's amazing, you know, because they're Toronto actors.
Somebody did a Doctor Who one too that I saw. Cool. Where like everybody who was, you know, anybody that was in Doctor Who, any commercials they made through the years, they did a like an hour long.
But what's the Paul McGann narrating commercials get like, you know, like 4 days later? Like, isn't he like a voiceover god? Wasn't Pertwee one?
Pertwee was, and Tom, I mean, and Tom
Baker absolutely was, yeah.
A million things. But, you know, like Elizabeth Sladen doing a car commercial, and then there's Peter Davison doing one for like a coffee machine or something. And, mm-hmm. You know, someone put that together. I'll look for the SCT.
Ian Levine. Does Ian Levine commercials?
Ian Levine, no. Sadly,
John Levine.
He's not in the cut. But what he did, though, that, I mean, we talked about this before, too, that it blew my mind at the time, was the completely mental misadventures of Ed Brimley.
No, that was, I think, where Count Floyd, you know, he started to think, well, maybe I can break out. I mean, Bob and Doug had broken out.
Exactly.
And here's the Ed Grimley thing. And then, you know, I don't know how he got involved.
Well, I think that his...
the Ed Grimley show, it was such an amazing fit.
Paul Flaherty is the brother? Is that who I'm thinking of? Because if you start looking at the credits of that cartoon, you got Martin Short, Dave Thomas, I think Paul Flaherty.
Paul Flaherty, because I'm holding the Count Floyd record, mini he tried to release novelty songs. I actually have the LP and I have the 45 promotional for Valentine's Day, and he's got four songs on this: The Gory Story of Dwayne and Debbie, Treat You Like a Lady, I Remember Reggae Christmas Eve in Transylvania, and that was off Dr. Demento. They played that a lot, and then Count Floyd Is Back. This is from 83. So yeah, so I guess like after Strange Brew, and that I don't know about, like, I can't gauge your area, but I can't go into if I go to a flea market or a used record store anywhere and I flip through, I'm going to find the Bob and Doug McKenzie record. Because it's massive here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I've found much in the wild. Maybe I had it when it came out and everything, but it the fact that the show was a cartoon and then it takes that break
and does exactly what he did on SCTV, and he tries to scam kids, but they added that extra element of the kids going, "Hey," and then that's like way funnier.
It is, but he's also not doing he didn't have to change, because it was never like he worked blue, you know, when he was Count Floyd or anything.
Oh no, it's so completely
it kind of works. And then suddenly it's this live action section in a cartoon. And then the set that they made around him kind of looked animated, like, you know how the coffin looked a little more like a cartoon coffin.
Oh sure, yeah.
It was just this insane, like, okay, somebody said to Martin Short, look, this character's pretty popular, let's do a thing. And Martin Short's, okay, I want all these guys coming with. And I think Catherine O'Hara might have done voices on it too.
She did. Jonathan Winters too.
Jonathan Winters. And then you had this break, this live action break with Count Floyd, and then it was right back to the cartoon and all these voices. And it was like another season of SCTV. That's how I felt. It was like, oh my God, it's still going.
I felt that way too. And during that time, I think that same summer, NBC put together an SCTV like special, and it was just clips, and it was basically, I think, like Guy Caballero. It was the only two people that were in the special were Andrea Martin and Joe Flaherty, and they were Guy Caballero and Edith Prickley, because the Congress had brought them up on charges. I can't remember what the conceit was, but I just remember Guy Caballero was like, I should have never colorized the beginning of The Wizard of Oz. but it was, well,
there's another SCTV where Bill Murray shows up at the climax at the end.
Yeah, that's, I think, a Days of the Week.
Is that what it was? Okay.
And I don't even, that's a really, like, Bill Murray was my hero as a kid. I remember being so excited that he was in this, but he really doesn't really do a lot.
No, they keep cutting to him like driving. I think he's driving like a convertible.
Yeah, and they're doing the Mrs. Robinson thing, you know.
Yes,
and,
yes.
But it's like, okay, I'm 11 and I've never seen The Graduate.
Yeah, and I just, all I know is like, okay, these worlds are colliding again. Like these guys that are on different things are, you know, it was like. It was like when Eric Idle hosted SNL as a kid, because it was like it had been a year that you know, Channel 2, the PBS had been showing Python, and then all of a sudden there's Eric Idle. You go, I didn't know more people knew about this. You know, they're all kind of friends, and they're all, you know, those worlds that would collide. And I remember that Bill Murray moment, just going, where did this come from? But that must have been when it was like officially on. Because it had to be like 81 or 82 or something, right? He was already off of SNL, I think.
What was that?
Murray was done with SNL.
Oh, yeah, no, he was definitely off SNL, and he probably was filming something here, and they pulled that off. I'm really not sure. I never really looked into it. Now, the other thing with Count Floyd, he did commercials, and but he also was part of the Rush tour. In the 80s, Rush would play a video of Flaherty as Count Floyd. I think it's on YouTube.
Oh, and this is like, ringing a bell.
It's like something that I totally knew at the time and then just forgot about. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, I remember this, you know, but I hadn't thought of it in years.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just sort of like pops up in things, and he goes all over the place after this, you know, TV, movies. And then I think the most significant thing he got, other than just one episode, walk-ons, was he got a series called Maniac Mansion, which was based on video. Yes,
and I knew about that because of being a member in long-standing of the Star Wars fan club, and the getting the Bantha Tracks newsletters that would come four times a year. And it was that time where you're like, I don't know, should I still be in this club? Like, I don't know. You know, like Star Wars is done, you know, and Temple of Doom came out. Like, I don't know, are they going to do anything else? You know, whatever. And so they would, you know, in the newsletter, they would report on anything, you know, like one cover of Bantha Tracks was that photo of Lucas, Jim Henson, and David Bowie for Labyrinth. Like, this is what Lucas is up to. And then there was a big article on Maniac Mansion, because I think it was a LucasArts game or something like that. Was it like a video game that became a show?
Yes, I believe it was a LucasArts game, and it says Lucas created the show. I don't know. But again, it's got Flaherty in it. And then John Hemphill's in it again from SCTV, Happy.
And the other guy who's in it is he's playing the child who's like, he looks like he's, you know, 30, but he's really like 7 or something.
Oh, like, yeah, George. Yeah, yeah. The he's an adult, right?
Yeah, he does the voice of Beast.
Beast. And he's actually in the first X-Men movie.
And that's right. He's got a cameo in the first.
He's a trucker. Yeah.
That's right.
He gets around that guy. I can't believe that they didn't use him more in the new. They're not using him in the new one, are they?
They are. He is.
Oh, they are. One.
Yeah.
Okay. They switched what's his name? Gambit.
I think they switched Gambit, but just about Gambit
used
else...
to be played by the actor who was on Kung Fu: The Next Generation, and I was surprised. But yeah, that dude pops up in so much. I think he was Cheap Chirpa on the Ewoks. He did a million, you know.
Oh, VO stuff. Cartoon.
And he does pop up in movies and stuff, and it's always.
But that voice. He's a great voice. Was that like the early Disney Channel that ran that Maniac Mansion, or was it something else?
Yeah, it was I recall it as being we only got it from one side, and I think it was a YTV program here. It was a Canadian and American co-production, and I think it's the Family Channel had in the United States.
Family Channel, that was Yeah. And I never really saw. I mean, I've seen clips on YouTube and stuff, but I never really saw because I didn't have, you know.
I'm not sure. 90 to 93. I probably never had cable.
So that's when it was on. Was 90?
Student. Yeah. So I think I've seen it once or twice. But no, I never really watched it. I guess Eugene Levy has a credit in it, which is surprising. The music is by Jane Sibbery. She's done some pretty interesting music. She was in the Crow soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, Jane Sibbery. God, there's a name. She's Canadian.
Yes.
Redhead, right?
Depending on the day, I guess.
Yeah, I remember her. She had some like minor kind of VH1 hit years ago.
You mean On the Beach?
That might be it.
Did that actually reach all the way across the border?
It's just one of those things that, you know, all you had was MTV and VH1, and then suddenly you'd see like, oh, this is like, oh, who are the Indigo Girls or whatever, you know? Jane Sibbery, I totally remember that name. Like,
yeah,
it's Laurie Anderson, but kind of an interesting.
I think the thing I like best is the song she did on the Crow soundtrack that I can't answer a follow-up question as to what that was.
Okay.
But I remember that was like my favorite thing. But I was like Jane Sibbery, and that was neat to see her name there. And also after that, that show ran for 3 years, but during that time he was appearing on shows like Morton and Hayes. And this I really want to bring up because remember Morton and Hayes?
Rob Reiner. Yes. This was that, again, that thing that I came across on TV one night, and it was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, you know.
And it was kind of like a, they were like a Laurel and Hardy type team that were sort of forgotten. Yeah. It was a mock doc series kind of.
Yeah, like I've always thought Flaherty had a real knack for playing old timey comedians.
Oh yeah.
You know, like it was insane how good he was.
Yeah.
At that, and to see him in anything period is like, yeah, like he's in Johnny Dangerously briefly, and you're like, I get that. He's got that going for him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's in, here's another one. Who's Harry Crumb? One of those John Candy vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Who's Harry Crumb? Yeah, I remember that movie.
Candy really did suffer from being an amazing, like, I found this about Jack Black, too, where Candy's an amazing talent. Jack Black's a great talent. But you make them the star of the thing, and it's really hard to do.
Like, well, I think I remember reading about Candy, you know, years and years ago, where he sort of, if he saw something in the script that said, you know, Joe, you know, whatever the character is, you know, he's so fat, he falls down the thing and fat this and fat that, he'd go like, nope. Like he just, you know, he wanted to do things that didn't focus on his weight and his size and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a far better actor than, I mean, God, the stuff you think we could have gotten from him. When you think about like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and how amazing he is in that movie, you just think of all the other stuff. And you know what he's brilliant in is JFK.
He's got two
scenes in JFK, and he's just.
He's that kind of like hip cat guy.
Yeah, and there's footage of the real guy. So when you look at the footage of the real guy, you go, oh, my God, he completely did an impression. He just nailed it completely, kept the sunglasses
on. But, I mean, I want to point this out, that I think a lot of great comedians, people who can be very, very funny, can be very, very serious and a little scary when they want to be. And Candy had that. You know, a lot of his characters are very angry and scary people.
Yes, yes.
And I find Flaherty had that, too. Like, and that really brought something to the performance, you know. Yeah. You ever want to laugh, and it's not that funny, but it is there's a little sketch. I think his name is like Frank Bildenhaus, and he hosts a carpentry show, and it's Candy, and he's clearly playing a Nazi-esque German. You know, but he's playing a German so well, it's kind of creeped me out a little bit, you know. And he's got a huge German Shepherd, and he brings it to the store, and it's barking and making all the people uncomfortable. He's like, you're a dirty star, you know. And it's just absolutely like, you would be terrified of this man if you walked into a store. You know? But it's funny because you're not on the receiving end of this. You know, this nightmare, and
right.
I found Flaherty and Candy both shared that.
Yeah, they could
play somebody getting a little, you know, ugly with them. And I haven't seen Stewart Saves His Family, but I'd have to say one of Flaherty's greatest '90s role, if not his, probably his best '90s role. It's in Happy Gilmore.
See, now that's something that I saw once on
HBO.
Like, I'm not a Sandler person, but it is the thing. Like when he died, I was, because I, you know, I'm usually up very, very late, and so I you know, who was the first one? One of the Murray brothers tweeted it,
right?
And then, you know, it wasn't Brian, it was Joel, I think, or something.
Oh,
and
they Joel, said, right.
You know, we lost another legend. Da, 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 da. But, you know, it wasn't like, it didn't go official until the morning, kind of. And so, but people started posting stuff because it started to kind of get around. And I just, it's interesting how the generational thing happens, where you start to see more people saying, you know, Happy Gilmore, like that he's the guy in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, he's the biggest takeaway in it. He's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. There's like a whole generation of people that know him from that. That's the guy. That's
great, because he's funny. Absolutely. He's absolutely funny in that.
Yeah.
With Jackass. And I used to use that all the time, but not with any of the inflection that he did. You know,
Right.
But then again, like, he just kind of went into things like the Snowboard Academy. He's in Detroit Rock City, which a lot of people really like. I'm not
fan of it. I saw that. It's not a film, but
it's not. That film
a
actually,
couple of moments.
That film contacted me and my friend if we had a Stretch Armstrong. I remember that.
Oh.
And I was like, nope. And then, they had it in the film. So I was like, well, they found one, you know.
Oh.
But he's in Freddy Got Fingered, which I've never seen.
Okay. But again, all of these are like in and out. He's in a couple of scenes and that's...
Yeah, yeah. That's I think he had a couple of memorable things go on, like on television. He did some voices, and I think he's in a few King of Queens playing a priest. But there was some stuff on TV he did in the 2000s that were kind of fun. Like, he did that 70s show with Dave Thomas again. And they played Mounties.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he also, and this is something that, wow, either I never saw or maybe I just forgot about it. But there was a syndicated Police Academy TV series.
No, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, in 97 to 98. This is pre-Freaks and Geeks. Like a syndicated, you know, like I guess it was on like after Xena. And the only holdout they got from the movies was Michael Winslow.
The guy who did all the voice and all the sounds.
I ever told you my Michael Winslow story?
No, but please tell me you have a Michael Winslow shelf right under the Steve Railsback one. Where all the...
I do not. Because I don't... Wait a minute. Was he in anything but Police Academy movies? I think he was.
His collected works.
Yeah, I might have something he was in that doesn't have the words Police Academy in it.
His autobiography.
I don't think I own Spaceballs. So maybe I don't know. But he was the guest of honor at a toy show in Florida I went to.
Oh, wow.
And my son. And... they also, so in the morning I go there and they've got a freak show, like the guys putting nails in their doodads and
what?
Right on the stage, and I'm sort of like, I've got like my son is six, and I'm like, yeah, all right, I don't know, you know, like he wanted to get like a snack, and it was just like, okay, well, we'll just eat and go.
This is like a toy show or a
it was a toy show, but like also like they were, you know, it was kind of an edge con, you know, and I think there was like a tattoo studio on site, you know, but I went there for the toys. I just went there to see like Mark Hockenbone.
Were there drug dealers walking around too, selling? They had tables where they were selling heroin and stuff.
You tell me. Again,
quite a show.
6-year-old with me.
And, the show.
Wasn't looking to see who was holding. But right after that, and this is what drove me out, was now like 11 in the morning. I'm still hanging around the show. They go, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Winslow. And he does his routine over the loudspeaker of the entire auditorium.
Oh, God bless.
So I'm like talking to Mark Hockenbone. I'm like, yeah, listen, I'll see you tomorrow. It's blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
And it was just like, yeah, this is, who thought this was a good idea?
Well, I mean, after the guy drilling nails into his doodads.
Yeah, that was breakfast.
Yeah. They had to get to the loudspeaker at some point to get that, wash that out of your brain.
Oh, it was just the craziest thing. It was just sort of like, okay, I think maybe that they thought that the sound wouldn't carry through the whole hall. I'm not sure. But you could not hear. He was doing his signature bit is Jimi Hendrix doing the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, yeah. So Flaherty was in the Police Academy syndicated show.
Series with Michael Winslow.
Because Freaks and Geeks was 99, I want to say.
Yeah.
I think. Okay. And that had to be one of those, like, they went for him.
Oh, that they wanted him, like, for sure.
They had to go, this is the guy we want for the dad, pure and simple. No, no arguments. You know, I just assume that he didn't read for that. You know, he didn't have to come in and you know,
it,
because
it felt it, like he was precast. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a love letter to like, this is the guy to play the dad. And it, he's so good in it. He's so, he's still Flaherty. He's still doing those like, what, you know, but he's like a decent dad and he's like trying to figure his kids out. And he's, you know, there's that episode where he, the Jason Segel character, who's kind of like crashing on the couch. I don't know what's going on with his parents or something. And he's loves, you know, he wants to be a drummer. And then Flaherty says, well, have you ever heard Buddy Rich? Oh my, you've never heard Buddy Rich? Because he's always gone on about Rush and how great Rush are and everything. And he starts playing him these. And it's just this like, it's one of the better episodes, but it's really a showcase for Flaherty.
Mm.
Trying to help this guy who's not his kid, turn him on to something, but also kind of like, you know, you're going to have to get off the couch at some point. You need to get your, you know, do you want to be a drummer or what else do you want to do, or kind of thing. And Flaherty's just, he's effortless in it. And I forget the woman who, you know, she's done loads of stuff, but the woman who played the wife was and the mother on, and that was wonderful too.
Mm.
And she was in, she was in the Sam Raimi, A Simple Plan, which is a great, like modern kind of noir thing. And lots of stuff she's been in, but they were a totally believable kind of
a couple. They really time. Worked. Yeah. Now think that, you know, his career started to kind of wind down around the 2000s. I can't believe this is 2002 already, but I watched this on CBC when it aired. It was the True Meaning of Christmas specials. Have you ever seen this? It's Dave Foley. And it's like he just created his own variety special. He's got Dick Dale, Mike Myers, Bing Crosby, which is actually
Flaherty.
And it was, I watched this. I remember watching this. I forgot Flaherty was in it. But yeah, like Tom Green's in it, and Jason Priestley, Andy Richter, Dave Thomas. Oh, he's Bob Hope, right? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And Kevin McDonald. Yeah, this was a one-off CBC special for Christmas.
Okay, so it wasn't a U.S. thing. It was over there.
No. I just remember it because I think Dave Foley goes to Mike Myers' house at one scene, and this was Myers was amazing, you know. And Mike Myers is sitting in a bathtub full of money. And he's like, Dave, be a dear, put a little more money on the pool. it was a funny, you know, very gentle joke. But then, yeah, he started working like, this is when I kind of started to feel like, oh God, like, is he okay? Like, doing a lot of Canadian shows. And he ended up like on a show called Chili Beach, which actually, weirdly enough, I know someone who worked on that. And then he ended up on a show, a comedy network put on a very low budget, almost cable access-y looking show called Caution May Contain Nuts. And he was not only on it, but he was doing Count Floyd.
Oh, wow.
And Guy Caballero. And they were advertising it, you know, with his SCTV characters.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I checked it out and I was like, oh God, you know, like just very low budget. Not.
And so he was born in America, in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah. And weirdly enough, the three famous people like come from that area, Mr. Rogers, Joe Flaherty and someone else who I can't remember. And they all had shows in Toronto.
Yeah, and did he live?
George Romero. That's the other thing. Yeah.
Romero. Did Flaherty live in Canada then for most of his life?
He must have at some point. You know, living like I don't really know, but I assume during the, you know, the Second City days and the SCTV days, he absolutely lived in Canada. But you know, being a dual citizen, I imagine that, you know, and Pittsburgh is not that far away from Toronto.
Right.
I go to Pittsburgh all the time.
Right. I just, you know, I wish he would have been used more, you know, the last, you know, 20 years or so, or 15 years.
Yeah.
Whenever his health went. And I'm not casting, you know, aspersions. I'm not saying that, you know, why didn't the phone ring or whatever, but, you know, there was, you know, not long ago, not long before he died, there was a post that kind of went around that, you know, Martin Short was kind of organizing, taking people, you know, pledging money to help out with, you know, the health issues and everything. And it was just kind of heartbreaking. I just thought, you know, these guys that have known him all these years and the ones that are incredibly, you know, and I don't know what was done or who did what. And I've said,
we never will. Yeah.
You know, about things during COVID where you'd go like, where's Elton John, you know, pulling out his checkbook to save the troubadour or whatever. But Flaherty, it just seemed like he just kind of, you know, faded into the background sort of, and you'd think that he'd show up in more things that more people were doing. But you know, maybe he didn't want to work as my, I don't know. I don't know what.
Yeah. The I don't know either. He canceled the show, but I did grab an autograph.
Oh, good.
And it's, you know, I've got a portrait of him I painted, and I've got that autograph on the wall, and that would, you know, that was important. He was, like, you know, I'll never meet Candy, but I think that was the member of SCTV I most wanted to meet.
He was, I mean, for me, it was probably Martin Short, but that's, you know, that's that he was later, you know, I wanted to meet them all basically, but like, you know, Short and Moranis and Flaherty and Candy were always kind of the standouts, and Flair. I even thought Guy Caballero was hysterical. Those bits go on forever too. Like mm-hmm. some of those just talk, you know, hey, hi, you're in my office and let's tell you what we're doing at SDTV right now.
It's always a sham though. It's always behind the curtain is a bunch of like scotch tape and prayer. Yes. And that's the best part about him.
And the fact that he can walk. He doesn't need to be in a wheelchair.
Oh yeah, that he's pathetic. He thinks that's going to make people respect him. And that's like when he does characters like Vic Hedges. They always have a terrible flaw, and like Vic Hedges makes me laugh because he's like he clearly has a pot thing. And he keeps saying, yeah, I can't play there because somebody planted a reefer on me, you know. He says that like, and I doubt they ever released this episode again on any sort of service or platform, but there's an episode where they're parodying Black Like Me.
Okay.
But it's called Black Like Vic. And okay. Vic's so dumb, he thinks he looks convincing. and that's the whole joke of the thing, and it's funny because he doesn't understand. And even when he gets home, he's like, I gotta write a book about this, I'm gonna call it Black Like Vic. And she's like, there's already a very popular book called Black Like Me. And he said something to the point of like, yeah, but this one's gonna be about me. You know, it's just
He and the one, you know, the way that you know, Johnny LaRue would always kind of lock horns with him, and or he'd kind of always threaten him that, you know, you've got to get the ratings up, or you've got to, what about this? And the rhythm of he and Candy together was just
fantastic.
Levy was in Splash as well. Eugene Levy was in Splash. Candy was in Splash, but so was Eugene Levy.
Yeah, that was another reason I probably saw it.
Flaherty wasn't in Splash. No. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it was just those great times when you'd see a face and go, oh, that's, you know, the you know, like Stripes, like seeing him in Stripes. You know,
it just felt Stripes.
Like, oh, you know what else he's in? Is maybe I got too excited. He's in 1941. Joe Flaherty.
Is he really?
And almost positive, he's like the MC at a club where the big fight scene happens. I think he might be in that too.
I have never fully given that a chance.
And that's another one that's, you know, John Candy's in it, Belushi, Aykroyd, I think Flaherty, and maybe somebody else from that pool of people. But I think Flaherty's
Edward Deason's in that.
Eddie Deason, the great Eddie Deason.
His character's name is Raoul Lipschitz.
Wait, Joe Flaherty's?
Yeah, in 1941.
But see, that's another, that's again a Spielberg movie, but written by, I think it's written by Gale and Zemeckis, right? Didn't they write that?
Could be, yeah. Oh, right. Because
it was originally a horrible title that you could never get away with even then. What the script was originally called, I shan't repeat it here, but you can look it up. But that connection there with, you know, and I mean, Sperber might have been in 1941 too, maybe. I could be getting that wrong. I know she's in
Back. Oh, no, she's in, is it Zemeckis? Can't Find Do I Love. Want to Hold Your Hand?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I Want to Hold Your Hand. Yeah, she's in I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, Deason's in that too. So Deason's I think there's too. Something to be said about what you're trying to say.
Yeah, like just these faces that you go like, oh, so they, and then Zemeckis does, directs Used Cars, which I believe was his first directing job. And there's Flaherty again. So Flaherty is in 1941 then, isn't he?
Yeah, Raoul
Lipschitz. Okay, yeah. I remember he's in like a white tuxedo jacket. And I think he's kind of like either the owner of the club or he's kind of like an MC or something. And he's got a few scenes and, you know, just that wonderful time of the late 70s where, you know, all these all this talent, all these faces that all came from a similar start show up in these much bigger things. And it was like a comfort, you know, to see them when they show up in things. You know, I didn't see 1941 in the theater. But, you know, I rented it on VHS, you know, whatever, whenever that was.
I have a friend who really swears by it, but I just don't. I've tried. And it's just not something I need to.
It's not a disaster. I think for years it was made out to be like this, you know, how could this possibly happen kind of thing. And it's not that at all. In fact, it's much better than it was ever given credit for at the time. And it's.
I want to just point out that I was Googling something about that sketch show he was on, and I didn't realize that it was actually. Pretty innovative of him to do. I feel bad now because I didn't realize that was an Edmonton-based comedy troupe of Indigenous First Nations people.
Oh, well.
And he was helping out. And
hope you feel good about how you trashed it a few minutes
ago. Well, no, now I feel bad. They didn't have any budget, right? So, no. But a Canadian, that's Canadian broadcasting in general. But that's actually...
Yeah. He's actually... I found a couple clips of him on what it looks like a kids show from like 77 or so, where he's hosting a game show on the show.
Wait a minute. Before we sign off, I want to make sure I know what that is.
And it's like he's wearing like a silver, you know, it's totally 1977, 78 kind of thing. And he's got like...
Yeah, there's a couple of TVO shows that would have aired around that time that like... Short appeared on, and Candy, of course, was on Cucumber as the weatherman. You know, what's the Sunshine Hour? That might be it.
Maybe that's it. And I think it was a runner that would be in the show where it was like, it's time for, you know, count to 10 or whatever it was. And then he had a spaceman came on and spoke in like beeps and stuff.
This could be. There's almost nothing about it, and I have to look it up. But it does have, and this would be interesting to me, Levy and Martin in it as well. CBC morning show. Yeah, it's just the Sunshine Hour, and that's it.
Maybe that's what it is.
That's probably it. Because there isn't a lot of children's stuff in Joe Flaherty, you know, until like the Ed Grimley series.
To have YouTube, that these things that.
Oh. Goodness,
you know,
yeah.
Would just be memories that you'd have to, you know, somehow find proof of that.
Well, you and I both remember being Doctor Who fans and like having that whole situation where you would have people remembering episodes that are no longer available anywhere, and that you would read those and like you'd feel like you were watching the show.
Well, you know, it's funny. The other day I got a call for. Somebody got, you know, David J. Howe, who had done some Doctor Who books, got this guy in touch with me who's doing a book on the history, every Dalek toy ever made, kind of. He's trying to, you know, be as extensive as he can. and they're going to publish it over there. And we've been exchanging messages, Facebook messages, and we got on the phone the other day, and his doctor was Davison. Like, he saw some Baker when he was a kid, but then Davison was really his doctor. And, you know, when I, you know, he was asking me lots of questions about how I discovered the show and when this and that. And it was almost like there was a little bit of jealousy of like, oh, well, you got to see it all the time, you know, because they just didn't repeat it over there. You know, like here you get them in the packages, like the Time Life package of like two or three seasons of Tom Baker. And then, you know, we'd get him on Friday nights on PBS, and then getting the.
Yeah, we had Doctor Who twice a week on TVO, and then when the PBS affiliate picked it up, it was like 8 days a week of Doctor Who.
Yeah, and then I don't even know if they got, because remember in like 85, 86, and suddenly the big announcement was, good news, America, all the existing stuff that you haven't seen, you're getting packages of now. And they started with An Unearthly Child. And suddenly, for the first time, certainly in the Twin Cities, there was, you know, got to see all the Hartnell, all the Troughton, all the Pertwee ones, and they played them in order. And, you know, the UK was kind of jealous, like, well, how can we? They just didn't, you know, and so it became much more of a memory
thing. Take your one VHS of Revenge of the Cybermen.
Yeah, your audio cassette. Sorry. Yeah, your audio cassette copy that you had to piece it together. And
hey, so, I have a Legopolis somewhere.
There was a Tom Baker audiobook of State of Decay. I remember it being in one of these UK catalogs of trying to get whatever I could, and it was just a bizarre, you know, cassette. He reads like an abridged version of State of Decay. You know, it's one of the last things he did merchandise-wise.
Was that a Terrence Dix?
It was a Terrence Dix. It was because it was meant to be on in the 70s.
Oh, like I know. But I mean, you're really betting with the house if you choose Terrence Dix, right? Because he's so. He's so synonymous with those books.
Yes. Yes. And it was a Terrence Dick story that was a script that sat around since the 70s. And then they brought it into 81 because there was like a Louis Jordan Dracula series that was going to be on or something. And so they canceled it. But I remember that. Baker read State of Decay. And it's just this box with a picture of him, you know, 81 style picture of him on it, State of Decay. And it was like, just such a weird, you know what I mean? Like those, the audio things that were out there, like the Pescatons and the Genesis and the Daleks record and the sound effects record. And then like, oh, let's have him read State of Decay before he leaves.
Yeah. Like, well, I guess, you know, let's think about that season. That is the most merchandisable episode of it. I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know, what are you gonna do with Warrior's Gate? Explain what it meant? Like, I still don't know.
Logopolis. What that's about. The Logopolis board game. Let's get that going. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I would prefer to play Logopolis to Castro Volva.
Yeah, I just, you know,
it's mathy goodness, isn't it?
The things we sat through as kids to, you know, because we kind of had to, you know, to see these things and just what is going on. Like, I remember the one, the Davison, I know we're getting away from Flaherty, but there's that Davison.
Wow, are we far?
And I can't remember which Davison one it is, but he's floating in space and he takes out a cricket ball from his pocket.
Yeah, that's Four to Doomsday.
Florida Doomsday, and the helmet doesn't even have like a shield on the
front. No, it's just, and it's like oversized foam novelty cowboy astronaut helmet. Yeah.
Yes. And he throws the ball, and that he catches it or something, and it gives him the force to get back inside the ship.
You know what? I've seen that episode maybe twice in my life, and I can tell you right now, when that ball comes back, the music goes like da 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 da, like.
Well, you know, you could be this guy that I talked to the other day, and he could, that could have been your doctor. Davison is his doctor, so he got those stories.
He is a true fan.
Yes.
Because that is not the show at its best, in my opinion. No. Yet there's still enough in it that he went, I love this show.
And his favorite story is, a favorite Dalek story is Resurrection of the Daleks.
The Baker one? Colin Baker?
No, the Davison one in his final season, I think.
God, I hate that one.
And then his second favorite is Revelation of the Daleks, which is the Colin Baker one.
A lot of people really like that one. I hate it too. I don't hate it as much as Davison's. I think I hate it more. I'm using hate a lot in this one. I dislike the Davison one more, but the Colin Baker years were, you know, troubled for me. And
yes, they were for all of us, including Colin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, you know, I did this, the one guy I don't blame.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He would have given his all for that. But, you know, it's all kind of connected, isn't it? PBS, SCTV, Doctor Who, you know,
what's it all mean?
All this stuff. It's kind of, it's the stuff you had to kind of hunt for. And, you know, the more you think about the SCTV when it was airing, the more of a miracle Bob and Doug kind of becomes in America, that suddenly there's that moment where they're huge and the radio play, you know. And now I don't think the movie did that well, but still they got a movie made. And I saw
the movie twice. I think did very well here.
Okay.
But I don't think that SCTV was the Blues Brothers or SNL in terms of the States. And also, like, it is a uniquely, you know, like, what's that? I tried to watch those a few years ago, this Australian movie, after that Dame Edna performer died. I watched one of his, one of the films he made for the Australian market.
Barry McKenzie.
Barry Humphreys or something like that.
Barry Humphreys, but then it was something McKenzie was the character, the Australian character.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much cut of the same cloth of Bob and Doug in that there's a relatability to it, but it's also just so full of jokes uniquely Canadian.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound snottish, but like I watched that Barry Humphreys movie there and it was just like, this is unbearably unfunny because I don't get the who this guy's supposed to be. I don't, you know, like you run into a Bob and Doug wherever you go, and I think some Americans get that.
I think we got it, and I mean my friends and I and like my dad, we saw it, I think two or three times I saw it in the theater because it was very Midwestern. It was very
What I'm trying to say is like a very big country, and I don't know how relatable they would be in Texas or Florida. Like it's not, it really is like a regional thing, and it defies borders. I'm not trying to say that like a Minnesotan wouldn't find it funny, but it is sort of like, but they're sort of in Canada in a way.
Yeah.
You know, like we all kind of have a similarity.
Yeah.
And it was a regional hit sort of thing. And it also like kind of broke up the Beatles a little bit for a while there because
it did.
Though there was jealousy and I think it's one of the few like SCTV cast things that only has it only has Bob and Doug in it.
Yeah.
No one else cameos in that movie.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And then to follow it up for Moranis right afterwards to get into Ghostbusters, which was just monumentally huge. And it was a part meant for Candy. Candy was supposed to be,
I think it was a part meant for Belushi, and then
I think Belushi was one of the team.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah,
I remember Candy in the storyboards.
Yes. And for some reason I remember the audio commentary, Harold Ramis saying or Reitman said for some reason Candy insisted he wanted to have like two Dobermans or something. As he wanted to have dogs.
Hey, that's something. Sort of like the character I'm talking about, Carl Bildenhausen.
just some weird thing, and however it didn't work out, and you see him in the storyboards, and then Moranis slides in, and it's like, oh my God, this is the biggest comedy, you know, of the year. Big, you know, it was massive, and Moranis did very well, you know, after that.
And, yeah, of course he did. Yeah, and he's in Club Paradise as well.
Yes, and although I did not see any comment from him about Flaherty, I've seen the Martin Short one, and I think Steve Martin, you know, the different things on social media, but I haven't heard from, I don't know if I've heard from everybody from the team about Joe, but maybe I should look harder and not.
Yeah, I don't know where you, I don't think Rick Moranis has any sort of like social media.
Probably not, but you'd think there'd be like a statement that would make its way out, and, you know, the Martin Short, I think I sent you that interview, and it was just like this cringy, the woman interviewing him, like, you know, did you ever laugh with Joe, or, you know, or did you think he was funny? It's like, oh, come on, man. You know, Short's doing his best to, yeah, yeah. But we were lucky to have lived in a Joe Flaherty world and all these guys. And, you know, I say this as someone who's very funny. I'm not going to lie. I'm never going to dunk a basketball. I'm not the, you know, not the greatest.
And modest.
I'm not the greatest lover in the world, but I'm close. Very close to being the greatest lover of all time.
I never know.
But humor-wise, you know, like we're those kinds of, like we laugh at a lot of different stuff, but we kind of we know like genius when we see it. And
oh yeah,
we were exposed to a lot of the best stuff, and you know we measure everything after kind of, you know, by it sometimes, you know, and it doesn't live up, and it's not what was better when we were. It's just, no, they just, we got very lucky with who we were exposed to, and you know, what, how we kind of were, you know, we're brought up with this stuff. So,
and thankfully, you know, a lot of people can be exposed to it to this day.
Yes.
You know, it's been preserved. There's episodes of SCTV on YouTube that I haven't seen since I was a kid, because some of the sketches have been cut out of syndication, and some of them should be.
If we've done anything in this program, it's to say, get yourself more acquainted if you're not with SCTV, although I think the 12 or 13 listeners we have are big SCTV fans, but expose yourself. I hope we've exposed ourselves sufficiently in this episode, if you know what I mean.
I think it's been an indecent exposure, sir.
Yes, there you go. Perfect. Yeah. So here's raise a glass to Joe Flaherty. And
I do. And I'm gonna watch a scary movie tonight in his honor.
There you go. God. There you go. Put the record on and then hit play on the scary movie.
Yeah, it's gonna be the Odd Couple. See, Jack Klugman plays a sports writer who's sloppy and drinks blood.
You haven't really appreciated The Odd Couple until you've seen The Odd Couple 2. That's when it really gets good.
Is that the Walter Matthau?
Yeah, they made a sequel.
I passed on that. Yeah, I know. Surprise. Oh,
you missed out. There's still time.
I thought Grumpy Old Men was fun. And I was like, oh, these two are going to be like Leslie Nielsen into everything possible. And it's like, none of it will be any good, because Grumpy Old Men was just a funny original idea.
Well, they did. I think they did a second one of those. They did The Odd Couple 2, and then they did another one.
Two If By Sea or something. Like they did like a cruise ship movie.
I think Brent Spiner's in it, too. Like, what other show could you have that's about Joe Flaherty where we could wrap it up with the last works of Lemon and Matthau together and bring up Brent Spiner, your favorite character from Star Trek: The Next Generation?
You know, I was just my kids were making fun of, like, you know, you're talking about like forgotten 90s movies, and my kids were really amusing themselves at the notion of like, imagine being the kid's parents who got beat by Air Bud, you know?
Yeah. Air Bud 6.
Yeah, it's like, or no, they were talking about like, there's like, apparently there's Air Buds where it's just little puppies, you know? And it's like, imagine You're at your kid's soccer game and a bunch of puppies are kicking their ass.
Air Bud.
I leave you with that. It has nothing to do with Joe Flaherty.
Yeah, that's a good button there to wrap it up. So there you go. That's our tribute to Joe Flaherty. I hope
loved him.
Yeah, we loved him and still do. And thankfully, we've got loads of clips and things that he was in to appreciate all over again.
Let me know in the comments or in the group. We're going to start a thread. I want to know your favorite Joe Flaherty SCTV character. What would yours be, Jason?
It's got to be Cal Floyd. I mean, I always think of Kirk Douglas because it was such an insane. I'd never seen something like that. I'd never seen an impression that was so off the wall. And I got it right away, you know, and I, at that point I'd only seen, you know, I don't know how many Kirk Douglas, but I just knew kind of who he was with the chin and the, but Floyd is just, it's just perfection to me. It's just the turtleneck, the cape, you know.
Well, and for me, I think it's also like that also Floyd was connected to Dr. Tongue and Bruno.
Yes. And yes.
That whole universe they created, like I don't think I have more favorite SCTV characters than those three.
The 3D House of Beef and the Taxi Driver episode. Like when they do that. Midnight Cowboy. And I knew Midnight Cowboy. Like I hadn't seen the whole thing, I don't think, at that point, but I knew enough of it and I'd seen it on somewhere up the dial, I guess, to get the joke. But it didn't matter because it was Candy and Eugene Levy. Candy dressed like a frickin' cowboy.
Howdy, y'all!
Walking down the street.
My favorite thing is Ratso telling him, you know, you're not doing a very good job as a hustler. There's no ladies in here. And he's at Cal Floyd's, or sorry, Dr. Tongue says something like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Am I impeding you? I didn't notice Miss Marianne Mobley coming by." And it's so well written.
He says like, "Don't call me." He's like, "Ratso, Ratso, Ratso, Ratso." You keep saying Ratso over again to like piss him off or something. And Marianne Mobley.
Yeah, but the three of them are really funny together as well, and it's just sort of this bizarre, thing, and I love it. I love it to death.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So I'm gonna go find that right now. Actually, I want to see them do those.
So I gotta go put on some SCTV because that'll clear the room. The kids do not like it. Yeah.
There you go. Easy peasy.
Hey, it works. All right. Well, thanks everybody. And we'll talk to you soon. All right, I'm going to end this, and then I'm going to go pee a lot.
All right, go pee a lot. That was great.